Hello and welcome to the Leadership and Insurance Podcast. This is a very special edition. We were looking to test the waters and take the temperature of the venture community, where we got to speak to four venture capitalists and corporate venture capitalists from the InsurTech arena. Really insightful, and want to thank all of the guests for their time.
We're here at InsurTech New York, the spring conference. I'm very lucky to be joined by Douglas Roth. Douglas, how are you?
I'm doing great. We're outside in the beautiful sunshine of New York on the river. It's great venue.
Good. Yeah. I mean, it's surprising to be having fun. It's this nice a spot. Usually inside, we would be inside a dusty conference room, but we're outside enjoying the sunshine. Douglas, it'd be great if you could introduce like CI Ventures and you know, a very different type of investment.
It is. Yeah. We are a little bit unique in that we're about a 30-year-old firm. And basically we are the strategic venture capital arm for the state of Connecticut. We invest, really across industries. So half the team is focused on the life sciences, therapeutics, diagnostics, and then the other half, the team that I sit on, we're tech, and it's all the tech acronyms, fintech, insurtech, obviously, cybersecurity, Internet of Things, robotics. Our core is probably seed stage, but we will go earlier, we will go later. It may be a four-letter word, but we also do venture debt. Across everything that we do, our companies that we support, that we fund and support, all have a Connecticut presence. And so basically through our investing efforts, we are trying to generate some economic development benefits back to the state that established us originally.
Sure. And that's why you've got such a strong connection to InsurTech, I'd imagine, because Connecticut's such an insurance hub. What does that mean in terms of kind of what you're looking for? Do you look for InsurTech investments that have more of a partnership opportunity with traditional insurers and carriers?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think our interest in investing in insurance, InsurTech companies is somewhat tied to just more generally, what does a young company need to survive, particularly in the early days? And I like to think of it as you need oxygen and blood. Oxygen is your capital, and blood is your talent. And so there are certain industries that would, you know, the oxygen and the blood exists in Connecticut, and insurance is certainly one of them. There's lots of sources of capital, including Connecticut Innovations in Connecticut. IA Capital is in the state. Hudson Structured has their venture capital arm. They're in the state. The Hartford has a corporate venture arm. Munich Re is in Hartford. And then clearly there's talent, lots of talent. And you know, obviously actuaries, but, you know, marketing, sales, finance that understand the insurance business model, super important for young companies. And so, you know, when we invest, we're an equity owner, and we want and invest for returns. And so we want our companies to scale and thrive and be successful. And they need those things, capital and talent, to be successful.
Yeah, I'm shamelessly happy you talked about talent, the blood part of the equation. I mean, I think that's so true. I mean, if you look at, you know, London is unsurprisingly a big hub of InsurTech talent. And, and of course, but the big thing that people talk about being like being London is being close enough to insurers and carriers to kind of get that feedback loop.
Yes.
You shorten that time for feedback. That means you've got more likely to be successful, get product market fit quicker.
Right.
What have you found that's different? You know, we're standing here in the tail end of quarter one of 2023. What are you seeing from an investment opportunity perspective that's different from perhaps 12 months ago?
Yeah, and I you say this is unfortunate. It's unfortunate for the entrepreneurs, but things are just taking longer.
Yeah.
You know, clearly the pendulum has swung from, you know, the company's advantage to the investor's advantage in terms of the terms and, you know, and obviously the valuation. I think that, you know, it's almost like the goal line has changed as well. You thought you needed to accomplish X, Y, and Z to then be in a great position to raise the next round of capital. Well, now you need to go well beyond X, Y, and Z before you really hit that inflection point. And so, you know, you're just going to have to, you know, do more with less, make whatever capital you have, make it last longer. So it is a tough environment, but from an investor perspective, you know, we're able to do value investing. We're able to get much better terms. The companies that are able to thrive in this environment clearly are doing something right. And so, you know, maybe it's somewhat cliche, but you know, some really, really great companies are started in downturns.
Yeah.
And so we want to be on the lookout for those.
Yeah, that was, I bumped into an investor that I know just now, and actually one of the things he said is the caliber of startup pitches he's seeing now is higher. Because the bar is that much higher. The rules are kind of more realistic. You know, we want you to get to profitability quicker.
Yeah.
Which actually, if it's a, I always think as a small business owner, it was like, that feels like a very old fashioned, normalized business opportunity, right?
But, well, I mean, and you know, I was working during the .com crash in the telecom industry, which was seeing an incredible amount of investing in startups and, you know, literally a sock puppet got funded, right? I mean, and so anyone can be an entrepreneur in that kind of environment. And so to your point, when things aren't at a macroeconomic environment aren't going well, you really have to be a very good entrepreneur, a very good leader, a very good manager, have an eye for talent and being able to bring that talent on and manage it in a difficult environment. And those companies will do well when the environment improves. So if you can be effective today, then you will definitely be effective when we get through this.
Doug, I think that's a great place to end on. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you.
Hello. So we're outside again, and I've timed this incredibly badly because we've got a helicopter going over, so hopefully you can hear us. But I'm very lucky today to be joined by Dominic of MS&AD Ventures. How are you, sir?
I'm doing okay, and you?
Yeah, very good, very good. We always bump into each other at these events.
Yes,
I've never got you on the record yet, though, so I'm excited to do that. I mean, MS&AD, I think people know, but it'd be great just to introduce briefly kind of where you are and maybe broadly your thesis on things that you're interested in.
So MS&AD Ventures, we have invested over the past 4 years in 93 startups to this day. So we like to invest in startups who have an insurance use case. So we may shy away from pure enablers, meaning by that companies working exclusively for insurance companies. We like to find a bit more independent business model, but we like to find those companies with an insurance use case, which typically can become distribution or data. So we have done that for health, for sustainability, for mobility, fintech, insurtech of any kind, across lines of business.
Great. And what really sort of, I think, is particularly interesting for us to say, like, how's the landscape changed for you? I mean, you mentioned health. I thought that was quite an interesting point. A lot of the VCs that I was working with before were doing lots of P&C stuff, lots of kind of SaaS, and there's a lot that really focused down on the sort of health insurtech side. Are there any particular theses that have come to the front of what you're looking for now, as opposed to maybe 12, 18 months ago?
Well, I think for us, it's all about how can we make how can we solve problems? How can we work more efficiently? And how can we become more relevant? Mm-hmm. And so you have a good number of solutions in the market that can help do that. We have invested in some of them. So we have solutions around data with Human API or Bina, for instance. We have solutions around other aspects like more niche, like fertility. So we have that as well. We have pediatrics as well. So plenty of problems are worth solving and may not be quite well catered for today. So we're looking for those use cases.
Yeah. So would you say there's more interest in the adjacent? Everyone's describing this as an insurtech and insurtech adjacent now.
So we would tend to invest typically in those adjacent because they are more independent. They can go after several verticals. One of them could be insurance. And that's what we are interested in because we can do some synergies between different verticals and we can help them get into the insurance space.
And for you, you've been in the insurance space a long time. You've obviously been in the investment space and the startup space. I know that from your background. Where do you think there's some, are there some obvious open goals that we're not seeing enough investment in? Are claims for me is one of these things that I think still slightly underinvested in.
Yeah. So for me, I would say just looking at, I like to start with regulation because people don't innovate or change because they want to or because they have to. So if I see regulation coming up strongly to change this or do that, I would tend to jump into that wagon. So today is all around climate and biodiversity. So the climate has been quite well invested in. Biodiversity is coming up, exactly the same landscape, same conditions, same reasons why it's going to be needed by everyone. So I'm quite keen on biodiversity today.
And where do you, I suppose, just for clarity, in terms of where do you get in for in the investment life cycle, do you do seed today or do you later?
So we tend to be typically a bit more early stage, so before A, seed to A. Our ticket size is $500,000 to $2 or $3 million. But we have done later stages as well from B. So then it would be maybe a bigger ticket. That's on a case-by-case basis.
The reason I ask that is because I think the landscape seems to have changed most dramatically for those people that were already at seed or Series A, and they're sort of, I always say, struggling with a difficult second album because the rules have changed. So now, one thing that I wanted to sort of test your opinion on is something that's been suggested to me is that the quality of startups we're seeing now, the quality of maybe the teams and the ideas is stronger, and perhaps that's because it's been a more difficult time for insurance.
So I would agree with that. If I look at maybe 5 years ago, you had one company doing one thing. Now you have 25 companies doing the same thing. So 25 startups in the same space. So therefore, it does create competitions. Then you can pick and choose the best one. So as a result, it may be a bit less innovative. You have more companies going after the same use cases, broadly speaking. So I find today it's maybe less disruptive than what it used to be. But you have... better quality eventually because you have more choice.
And what about the talent pipeline? Because I think we were seeing the makeup of insurtech businesses tended to be more tech people entering in the insurance space. Are we seeing that kind of much more kind of blended teams or much more insurance experience led teams?
I see both. I see the tech people getting in insurance. I also see insurance people who have the vertical knowledge getting into the tech. We see both. No issues either ways. We like to blend them and get people to blend. If it's just purely tech, they would come to us to maybe have some insurance expertise so we could help them.
Yeah, sure. And I suppose that's do you think what startups are looking for, has that changed at all? Because I think before people were looking for very much that smart money. They would say, right, we need that insurance knowledge. Are they sort of coming to, I mean, I suppose when they're coming to you, they're always coming with that. Is that still something that's a bit of a USP for you and the team?
So I would say if a VC has choice, startups also have choice. So what is the best for them? What is the best option? So it's not just capital, it's also market entry, expertise, anything that a startup can need across its life journey. And so it's about who can do that the best for them. So that's for every startup to assess what could be the best venue for them to grow together. And so for me, it's very much of when I look into a startup is how can I help them? It's not just capital, it's how can I help them for any kind of needs they may have. If I can, then, well, we have a good fit.
Yeah. And lastly, is there anything sort of innovation or maybe even startups that you're particularly excited about that you've seen quite recently?
So I've seen a few things interesting in mobility. Biodiversity is coming up. It's a bit early days, but it's coming. I've seen quite a few things in claims as well. If you keep digging, you start uncovering more use cases, something you didn't know about. It's quite niche, but in fact quite big. So I found a few of that lately when I was looking into the claims use case. So I would say if you dig, you'll find something good.
Yeah. I'm happy to end on claims. We know claims is a bit of a soft spot for me. So, Dominique, thanks very much for your time.
Sure.
Hello. So we're outside again at InsurTech New York, in between the helicopters. I'm trying to speak to my now new friend, Brian from Camera Ventures. Brian, how are you?
Doing good, thanks. Thanks for having me on the podcast, I guess.
Yeah, not at all. We're enjoying the sunshine, which I wasn't expecting, so that's quite nice. But, we're not just here for the sunshine. We're here for you, looking for investments, I presume. Be great before we dive into sort of understand a little bit more about the Camera Ventures setup. You know, it's a sort of blend of CBC and family office, which is quite unique. So, yeah, it'd be great to hear about that.
Yeah, for sure. Happy to give you the quick, 5 second spiel. So we're a single LP fund backed by Bill Cameron. His family owns a number of different insurance, financial services, and employee benefits related businesses, all that, participate and are intricately linked together and work together. So especially here at InsurTech, we're really interested in embedded benefits and embedded insurance, specifically around, you know, digital distribution models, right? Like, what are new ways that we can distribute our products outside of the traditional route of, you know, partnering with a broker to sell our products, or some of the other ways that we reach, you know, our customers at the end of the day. I think that's been the theme for 23. Everyone is very interested in embedded everything, embedded fintech, embedded insurance, embedded, you know, whatever. And it's going to be an area of focus for us for this year.
Yeah, it's interesting because you mentioned before we press record on this that the family sold the P&C license for the businesses, so actually you're not looking in the P&C space. I've noticed a lot more insurtech investors are looking at kind of like health and benefit space anyway. Is there more competition for those investments at the moment, would you say?
Yes and no. I think there, with any industry, there's always tourists that want to come in and they see the next hot thing. I mean, it was Web3 a year ago. Now it's generative AI, and it will move on to the next thing after that. The funds that care and know the space very well, like us, you know, we have always been hyper-focused on these kinds of businesses and know our ways in and around the business. So deal flow has never really been an issue for us. People tend to come to us first because of that deep subject matter expertise and our ability to help them scale, whether it's, you know, us becoming a customer, you know, becoming a distribution partner, or even just, you know, applying our subject matter expertise from the inside, having, you know, 50 plus years of experience, you know, of the carrier and so on.
Yeah. I've noticed as well that we were talking before, you know, you come from the startup world and then you've come from kind of a broader kind of like tech startup environment than just InsurTech. Does that bring something kind of different to the way that you look at investments and sort of leading on from that question? Do you think there's some areas of tech which you've seen be quite underutilized in insurance?
Yeah, well, let me touch on the first piece. I'm not sure I'm super qualified to answer the second one.
Fair enough.
But I mean, specifically about the way that I look at investments is really just around go-to-market strategy is like always the most important thing for me coming from a sales background. And it's very easy to build pattern recognition and be able to tell whether or not someone has cracked the code on how to build a really unique, differentiated flywheel that can acquire customers better, faster, and cheaper than their competitors versus another company that tells me that they have a cold outbound strategy, or, you know, they're using leveraging their network to get introductions, or, you know, a lot of what we hear a lot is the, you know, going through the broker channel and like, yeah, we want to partner with brokers, but what do brokers actually care about? Do they want to distribute your product? Have you heard any other market research or feedback around that? So specifically within the lens of how I look at those investments, it's always centered around how are you building your go-to-market function, especially in a tighter fundraising environment like we're in today. We want to understand how you're going to be able to take a dollar and turn it into two. We need to understand, you know, where those avenues for growth will come from and how you can do it scalably and profitably.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point because we talk about this all the time. When we have investors on, we always talk about, you know, especially when you're going early, it's team, right? The team is the focus. Yeah, you coming from that kind of go-to-market team. I'm fascinated that there aren't more, there's less of a problem in the US, but in the UK and Europe, there's been a lot of criticism that actually there aren't a lot of people that have come from startups and successful startups. Is that something that you think echoes in the US landscape as well? There's not enough operators in funds, do you think?
Not necessarily. I think that there tends to be a influence or a nuance for, you know, particular kinds of backgrounds. Like you come from Google or you're ex-Uber or whatever. Those companies were built in one of the longest bull market cycles that we've seen in the history of the United States. So just because they have worked at those companies doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, they have meaningfully contributed to, you know, building those businesses. And the classic example we like to use is like, you know, if you're building go to market for growth for Uber, you know, it's not very hard. Everybody uses Uber or Lyft, right? Or like, you know, everyone needs 15-minute grocery delivery, or not anymore in this economy, but, you know, the better way to build that is just to offer discounts. You're not necessarily, you know, adding any value or being the architect behind, you know, 15% discount to your Uber Eats.
Yeah.
You know, that in itself is a growth engine. The product sells itself.
Yeah.
So especially when we think about founders, we love founders that have really deep domain expertise, you know, understand the categories that they're building in, and deeply understand the problems that they're trying to solve, less the, I worked at XYZ flashy company or, you know, public bank company that, you know, obviously have a lot of expertise in building a company. that tends to be the founder that we try and avoid, actually.
Yeah, yeah. So. I was laughing you saying that because I'm sure it's the same the world over, but there's so many of these like last minute, last mile delivery things going on with trying to sell you like groceries that can turn up in 10 minutes. And it just reminded me of that conversation about 7 minute abs, and then I've got a new idea, 6 minute abs. You're like, well, how much more, how fast do I need my groceries? But bringing it back to insurance and kind of startup teams, one of the comments has been made, I just wanted to get your kind of thought process on it. Do you think we're seeing a slightly better caliber of startups looking for funding because it's a tougher environment? Almost like, you know, diamonds are under pressure. I'll make some bad analogy about that later. But just because it's a slightly tougher fundraising environment, there are slightly better kind of teams coming together or slightly different propositions. Do you think that's fair?
I'd say yes and no. I think in any environment, bull or bear, there will be the top 1% of teams that really know their space and know the companies that they're trying to build will always be able to raise capital. So I don't think it's necessarily an after effect of, you know, layoffs and having, you know, better founders around the table or, you know, more talent to be able to go out and start new businesses. Mm-hmm. I think what we are seeing is that the businesses that are coming back to the table raising rounds are not necessarily distressed, but they have had to reevaluate, you know, the way that they're have been thinking about growing, right? Because they've been in this bull market and it's burn, 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 grow, grow, grow at all costs. Now there's very much an emphasis on profitability, how you get there, and, you know, my kind of favorite adage, which is, you know, is this a business that you can add water and stir?
Yeah.
Back to the previous comment, right? Is, you know, no investor wants to, you know, give you a bunch of money to figure out if you can turn a dollar into two. They want to understand and they want to know that you already have a plan on how to turn a dollar into two. Yeah. And again, you know, add water and stir and, you know, I don't know, deliver a great hot chocolate, I guess.
Yeah, we're going to run out of good analogies, so we'll take that. But Brian, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure.
Good morning. I'm here at InsurTech New York, and I'm very lucky to be joined by Veronica from Unigroup Ventures. Veronica, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Alex. I'm doing great.
Yeah, thank you. There's an embarrassing side note that I might include or might not include. I got your name wrong in the recording, but this is where we know we're truly live. So, how are you enjoying the event? It was your first time at this event as well, yeah?
Yeah, first time. It's amazing. It's a small conference, so we get to meet everybody and kind of have all these quick 15-minute meetings at the round tables. So overall, great networking.
Yeah. So the reason we're doing these is to get a bit of a temperature check of the market. Obviously, everyone knows Unigroup Ventures, but just from kind of a broad top-level perspective, what are you guys interested in at the moment in the InsurTech ecosystem?
So at the moment, what we are following closely is the enabler subsector. It's one of the areas that we think is going to grow most quickly in 23. A lot of the companies in this ecosystem are now trying to create the infrastructure to actually help both the 1.0 challengers that came in the last few years, as well as the incumbents that have been kind of needing to go through their digital transformation and now looking for solutions to be able to better tackle the market.
Interesting.
That's one sector that we're spending a lot of time on and think is going to have a lot of investment in this year.
Yeah, that's really interesting that you're already looking at people to enable the kind of like InsurTech 1.0. Is that because they're more likely to embrace technology change? Have you seen that? Is that something that you follow?
Yeah, most definitely. So those types of companies are the ones that obviously have the faster sales cycles compared to the incumbents. And what we're seeing is a lot of the enablers getting to market quickly and having a broad set of logos as their customer base with these Challenger 1.0 that need to kind of innovate as well. And at the same time, they're working on the incumbents that have a little bit of a slower sales cycle and building kind of their logo repertoire there as well.
Yeah. And obviously, we're talking at the end of the sort of quarter one of 2023. A lot has changed in the last 18 months in terms of appetite. You know, what's kind of, where have you pivoted or not? Has that kind of maintained the sort of macroeconomic environment? What impact is that having on kind of what you're looking at the moment?
Yeah, so 21 was an amazing kind of peak year for InsurTech, $12 billion of invested capital. 22 was a little slower. And 23 is actually, at least for Q1, on track with 2020. But it's likely that the rest of the year is going to be a little sluggish, and overall sentiment in the VC community is one of caution and, you know, extended diligence periods and overall movement to earlier stages in the VC life cycle. So we're kind of doing the same thing, right? We're investing early stage. We always have. We're seed to series B investors, but there's a lot more focus on like the really early stage side of the market. When growth stage investors are halting, it's important to remember, right, who's going to be the next investor that's going to keep investing in your portfolio companies, and how long are some of these companies going to stay private as we wait for the public markets to settle. And so for us, it's making sure that we are spending time with earlier stage businesses and doing much more kind of portfolio management to ensure that what we have in our portfolio is going to be successful.
Yeah, that's an interesting point that I think we discussed is like, so you're spending a lot more time with your portfolio companies, working much more closely with them?
Yes, definitely, with all of them. And it's important for us to make sure that everybody is managing their burn and their runway in an effective way. And I guess our motto and mantra here is to make sure that they have 18 months of runway. I think you've probably heard that from everybody.
Yeah.
But it's crucial when markets are uncertain. We just have to make sure that everybody is in kind of a safety position.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. And what I was interested to hear about was how the investment kind of landscape is changing, but what you're excited about now. I know that you've obviously got this overlying thesis of enablers, but are there any sort of specific either companies or technologies that you personally are particularly interested in at the moment or excited about?
Yeah, for sure. So I personally spend most of my time on insurtech, both on the kind of P&C and life and health side, as well as cybersecurity for MRV. And the way that we view cyber is both on cyber insurance, but also the actual cyber technologies that we think can be a driving technology to actually affect the way that we underwrite businesses. Yep. And so in the cyberspace, one of our most recent investments is Centra. They are a data security company. They are kind of broader DSPM is how we define them. And I invested in this company earlier this year. And the way that we think that they can actually affect insurance is now that a lot of companies are moving to being either kind of cloud native or starting as cloud native, or they're moving to the cloud and are hybrid companies, this is a way for insurance and cyber insurance to get a much better understanding of the underlying risk of these businesses and offer policies that are much more tailored to their risk profile. So that's one where, you know, I'm super excited about. I think they're going to make a huge difference in the market from the cyber insurance perspective. And then on the health side, which I also cover, we're looking at companies that are building completely brand new product creation. So companies that might still be defined as challengers today, but they are not kind of the OG distribution challengers. They're actually creating net new product. And so there's a bunch of different companies in our portfolio, but the way that we view it is mostly businesses that are tackling financial wellness. And so how do we combine financial wellness, insurtech, actual healthcare into one platform? That's super exciting for us.
Yeah, it's a really exciting space actually. And it's been a, I wouldn't say it's a theme, but certainly something that's popped up a few times. And particularly, I think a few people in P&C that are looking much more closely at kind of life and health as well as a way to go. One thing that came up yesterday, and I wanted to get your opinion on, was that as it's been a slightly tougher time for raising money for startups, that the caliber of like startups they're seeing is higher. Do you think that's fair to say? Or is it just more that they've got our attention now because there's less capital around?
Well, I think that a lot of the companies that were having a hard time raising money, you know, they're either out of business at this point, or they just continue to raise bridge rounds with their internal investors. So those businesses are not going out to market and seeking new capital from new investors.
Yeah.
The ones that are able to hit their milestones are the ones that are, you know, going out on a full fundraising campaign. And those are the companies we're seeing. I wouldn't say we're not seeing any of the ones that are performing a little more poorly than what we would expect. But overall, I think folks know that investors are now scrutinizing businesses a lot more and spending a lot more time on the unit economics portion. And as we're seeing, right, a lot of these enablers coming up, there's an expectation to see software-like or, you know, traditional financial investor like metrics before, right, we're making investments. And so that's kind of at the top of the list now. It's no longer just growth at all costs.
Yeah. Brilliant. thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
It's morning two of InsurTech New York Spring Conference. I'm very lucky today to be joined by Jonathan Crystal of Crystal Ventures. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Good, good, good. A bit colder today. We were doing these outside, but there's less helicopter background, so that's good. We've just been taking the temperature from different investors. There's a lot going on in the macroeconomic environment. Just wanted to get your take on, you know, what your business is particularly interested in investing in right now, and maybe a commentary on how that's changed over the last 12 to 18 months.
Crystal Venture Partners, we're focused on investing in early stage insurance and technology companies. We're really focused on transformational businesses in this industry. And I couldn't be more excited about the companies that are coming out right now than I am. I think the things that's changed in the last, probably comparing to maybe a year ago, is as much as the heat has sort of come off the industry and the focus on it, if you're a founder starting an insurance technology business or insurtech in second part of 2022 or early part of 2023, you have your eyes open. You know this is not going to be a quick rich scheme. This is not going to be a build it and flip it kind of situation. You almost have like a compulsion to start a business. And what we found is that most of the founders that are building businesses right now are experienced, really understand the industry or really understand the problem that they're grappling with, and are focused on building real businesses around them. So I think that's probably a distinction between maybe sort of the frothiest period of 21 and 22 and where we are today is a sort of a pragmatism and a focus on like solving real business problems and working within the construct and the constraints of the industry, understanding things like compliance, understanding the regulatory environment, understanding capital markets and the limitations of a capital market environment where there's actually yields through risk-free assets. So I think that's kind of the major differentiator. Obviously, there's a lot of consternation around later stage businesses, that, particularly those that raise in at higher valuations, and really thinking about even in situations where they have sound business models and revenue models, that they may not have the cash position to be able to validate their business ultimately. And I think that's a very difficult place to be for both businesses and for the investment community.
Yeah, it's obviously something we've seen. It's really tricky. I mean, a massive empathy for those businesses that raise, because, you know, they don't force the valuations, the market do, and then they're in a position now where it's a very difficult time. You mentioned yesterday about the caliber of the, discussed it there, but maybe the caliber of propositions coming is better. Is that a little bit, are there less competition for those investments as well? Because there was a bit of tourist investing. Someone described it yesterday of kind of non-insured tax. Is that fair to say?
It's great to have myself quoted back to myself. It's sort of like real estate. Exceptionally rare real estate always generates high value.
Yeah.
Beachfront properties are always in high demand, and there are still businesses that are demanding and expecting valuations that would historically be high. I think what's challenging about this environment is the most common proposition is like no clearing price. There's not a price at which people will invest. So it's not clear, investors aren't being very clear about where they will make investments. And so, and people say, well, valuations are coming down. It's a little harder to say, well, here's 10 transactions that would have been at this valuation a year ago, and now they're at a lower number. It's, well, no, there's actually only two transactions, one which is very high, and another might have been a very problematic situation where like inside investors came in to make sure that the company still stuck around.
Yeah.
It's hard to make a real assessment of the market based on that.
Yeah. Are there any specific like technologies or trends that you're really following closely that you're excited about?
Yeah. So Crystal Venture Partners, we sort of look thematically at what's happening in the insurance industry, and then we look at the technologies that are going to be able to validate the sort of broader themes, whether it's climate change, or whether it's demographics around talent, whether it's around underwriting or services or distribution. I think that the technology that is probably on most mouths right now is from artificial intelligence and generative AI, and sort of how that's going to be applied in this industry.
Yeah.
Can it? Will it be? Personally, I'm extraordinarily intrigued and focused on that, and spending a lot of time digging deep into how this industry, which has historically been very slow to adapt to and to adopt new technologies, is going to take advantage of what I think is truly is a transformational technology. The sort of question on my mind is really around compliance and sort of regulations. Whether I guess the question I might raise is, are the winners going to be those who figure out how to work within the regulatory environment we all operate in and yet deploy these technologies? And I think being slow to really engage with artificial intelligence and sort of just the intuitive interface that's sort of afforded by ChatGPT, Bing, all these sort of various deployed large language models is kind of critical.
Yeah.
So the for me as a venture capital investor, it's like, okay, what are the businesses to build around this technology? For existing businesses, how are they thinking about incorporating it? So a lot of the questions I've been asking around this event are sort of open-ended. You know, how are you thinking about this? And some of the founders are sort of leaning in very hard. Others are saying, oh, this is on my mind. And others are saying, you know, we're just focused on the strategy that we had a year ago. It's hard to tell today what's going to be the right answer to that.
Yeah. That's a really interesting one, because it's the classic, like, almost a disadvantage to go first because of the regulatory framework. And someone's going to crack that. And then that was going to open the floodgate for that. It's the classic thing of the regulation is going to hold back any development we see in that technology to start with. But someone's going to win and win big, one would imagine. Because it's such an empowering tool. I mean, we've been using it. I wrote some of the questions using ChatGPT just as an experiment.
Don't worry. If you'd asked me to respond via email, I probably would have run out of ChatGPT too. We could have had a whole ChatGPT dialogue between the two of us.
I'm okay with that. I used it to write an articles association document, and then I got my lawyer friend to look at it, and he said, "Yeah, it's fine, it's possible. Like, let's go with that." So, yeah, it's really interesting. Just a sort of take that I wanted to get your specific view on, because you come from the insurance industry, you know insurance industry so well. Are you surprised that we've seen so much investment in digital MGAs, and particularly the valuations you've seen it? Because it's a very traditional model of building an insurance business. It's been good business, but I don't know if it fits into the VC landscape, particularly with the multiples that you need to kind of deliver the returns you would want.
There's like six questions built into
one. I know.
So
sorry,
I'm going to kind of get into a couple of them. When you say digital MGA, it's just an MGA.
Yeah.
Right? And no different than any, frankly, every business is going to be a digital, whatever you want to call it. MGAs are great businesses in some respects, which is sort of that a return on capital and return on equity position, the opportunity to get leverage from an operating model. If you use technology effectively to be the source or underwrite or service business, so you get higher margins on that, or you're able to get new business, that's a good business. It doesn't inherently make it a good business. And I think one of the things that I found from the generalist venture capital community is they don't have a good handle on the risk capital side of the equation. So they say, look, I got a fast growing MGA. This is awesome. I can get a ton of extra equity capital. We can talk to them about debt. Wait, they need more capacity? I have no idea where to find that, is the general sentiment among venture capital community. So that's one of the advantages we've had at Crystal Venture Partners, is been able to source risk capital, be creative around that, to think about structured capital, surplus notes, other ways to sort of create efficient capital structure for insurance manufacturing businesses. So clearly about what's kind of the day one capital structure, the day two capital structure, and the end capital structure target. The the ultimate question for those of us who invest in MGAs that happen to be technology enabled is going to be around exit valuation.
Yeah.
And are the metrics used to you know, acquire these companies going to be any different than traditional MGAs, or is it just a multiple of cash flows? We'll see.
Yeah, that was what I was interested in. So thank you for entertaining that question, because my thing was that I think they're great businesses. I think they're great investments. But I think that from a kind of an investment, like from a personal standpoint, I think that's where some money would go. But if I was a venture investor needing those 100x multiples, I just don't, with most of them, I don't see it. So yeah. I'm fascinated to see how much is happening in this space.
Look, one of the things that why we're focused on early stage and seed stage businesses is that we think you can build really solid, strong, kind of traditional businesses that don't have to have expectations of extraordinary multiples.
Mm-hmm.
Just get in early and partner with the founders to build really solid businesses and kind of keep, you know, focused on what the end is going to look like. There's a team here that I've spent some time with over the last 6 months. I really like the team. I really like the focus. I said, you know what? Don't be a venture-backed, you know, a technology business. Just be a brokerage. Yeah. Brokerage is a wonderful business.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you can make a lot of money.
Yeah.
Don't get some VC on your back to you know, force you to grow at unnecessarily fast rates and try to go for an exit that's not going to be realistic.
Yeah. Jonathan, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks, Alex.
Thanks for listening to our special edition of the Leadership in Insurance podcast. Really insightful, and want to thank all of the guests for their time.